everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Dirty Apple Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking with Robbie Eichmann. We'll get to that in just a few minutes, but first of all, we have a couple of upcoming dates we want to tell you about. On May 25th, we're going to be broadcasting our super secret stream live online. With that, the stream isn't necessarily a secret, but the location of it is. We're going to be hosting live acoustic music from the Whiskey River Kings, Rivers and Rust, Rather Not Say, Robbie Eichmann, and hopefully a couple of other surprise guests as well. You can tune into that live on YouTube on Saturday, May 25th from 2 to 5 p.m., and you can also hang out with us on Google Hangouts and, you know, request some of your favorite songs from the bands, you know, and just partake in hijinks with us, whatever happens that day. On June 8th, we're going to be hosting Rajpalooza 2 in Russellville, Alabama. We're going to have just about all of our Dirty Apple bands, including guests from The Struggling Jimmies, Dirty Swagger, Kyle Braggle and The Motions, and a lot of other fun, too. There's rumors that there's going to be a guy fighting a bear. I can't really attest to that. But I do know that there's going to be a giant water slide and a pool full of Jell-O. So whatever happens with that will happen. No questions asked. We're still planning this podcast and straightening out the kinks, so while we're doing that, we're still giving out free plugs to some of our favorite places. We want to give a free one this week to Pegasus Records in Florence, Alabama. They were kind enough to host us for our May the 4th show. That was our Star Wars themed show with Whiskey River Kings, Valley Roots, Rather Not Say, and An Abstract Theory. We encourage you to go check them out. They have an awesome record store just down the street from UNA. Have a lot of vintage vinyl, new albums that are coming out. I think they even have VHS, of all things, which is awesome. VHS is the new vinyl. Anyway, go check them out in Florence, Alabama. Go tell Eli that we sent you. And yeah, just an awesome record store we encourage you to check out. So this week we're talking with Robbie Eichmann. He is a really cool Huntsville musician that a lot of you have probably seen before, whether you know it or not. He's the guy who is playing a lot of acoustic music and does some really cool stuff with some looping pedals and everything like that. We'll ask him about that in our upcoming interview, and you know what? That's enough of me talking. Let's go ahead and get started.
I'm starting to think we won't even get a spring.
Hey, so where are you headed tonight? You said you were going to a show in Athens?
Yeah, tonight I play at Picasso's Grill. It's this little place in Athens. It's cozy, a little bar, and some solid food.
You have a ton of stuff like that all the time. Seems like you always get calls for somebody to just go like, hey, we need somebody to come up here and play music. We don't have room for a full band.
That's kind of how I got my start, though. For a little while, I was like South Huntsville's backup musician. I was working behind Dave for a while. Anytime Dave Anderson couldn't play, I had two or three different places that would call me for it. And
what's the actual term for that? Like an understudy or something like that?
I'm not real sure. Good position to be as a starting musician, then. It's like get your foot in the door in a lot of places like that.
It seems to me, and like, don't take this the wrong way, because I just see it this way, I guess, right now. Like, it's kind of like you're a substitute teacher a little bit.
A little bit. Especially when I'm following Dave Anderson, he does a loop station like I do.
Yeah.
But he's also been doing it for years and years, and everyone knows him for doing that, and he's so incredible at it. And then I get there, and they're like, who's this guy that thinks he's about to fill in Dave's shoes at a loop station?
Well, when was the first time that you did that, where you had to fill in for somebody and do it all on your own?
That was 2010 sometime.
Oh, so just a few years.
Yeah, I've only been playing solo for a couple of years, 3 years.
Well, how about before that? Were you with a couple of bands?
Yeah, in high school I was with a band, they were called the Burnt Fork Experience. And
wait, say that again?
The Burnt Fork Experience.
And I kind of like that.
It kind of started out as a joke, but it turned into a real band, or real as it could be, I guess.
What kind of stuff were y'all playing?
It was mostly Beatles covers and... You
know, really?
Yeah.
Well, what does the Burnt Fork have to do with the Beatles?
I'm
trying to make the connection.
Nothing. The name of the band came because all the kids in high school were wearing like Pink Floyd shirts, and they had no idea what it was, like Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
They just thought it was cool.
They just liked the prison
design. So we came up with this idea to create a band out of thin air and market a t-shirt and see if we could get people to wear it.
Did it work?
Now, the t-shirts were never made, but the band eventually did get made, and so
that seems like the ultimate hipster experiment to make a t-shirt and then make a band based on the t-shirt.
Yeah, it's kind of what happened. Sadly, you can go to, there's a website somewhere where you can order a Burnt Fork Experience t-shirt. I can't remember the name of it though, but I don't know if any ever got ordered.
I didn't even get one. But, well, was it just top, or did it have like a graphic on it?
It
was
had
a burnt fork actually on there.
I don't think it had anything to do with it. There's a logo that one of the members, my friend Stephen Brister, he he had drawn this logo for the band. It was just like very Beatlesque, our faces. Actually, I've got a tattoo on my back.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it, wow. Says, it says "Know Your Roots." But yeah, I was in that band for a while, and then we all went to different colleges, and I was in a band at Jacksonville State called Rocket Sauce.
What kind of stuff did they play?
It was interesting. It was almost punk, but not quite. See, like, it had me with like the, you know, the Beatles kind of background, you know, yeah. This kind of stuff. And then we had a drummer and a guitarist who was, we all played all the instruments. So I'm going to say drummer and guitarist or bassist and drummer. He was really into Metallica and like that kind of stuff. And then our bassist, who also played drums, he was a big Chili Peppers fan. And so yeah. We had like all these different things come together and it's kind of made its own.
Do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it was great. Because it made this whole new sound. Like, you'd have the funk drumming going on with a slap bass and, you know, just simple guitar chords. And it ranged anywhere from just, like, really power heavy to, you know, just fun and melodic. You know, just it hit everything.
I think that kind of thing can go, like, either way. It can be, like, a really bad idea or a great one. Because, like, if you've got, like, four or five guys, each with, like, different backgrounds and different ideas of what they want it to sound like, it could end up sounding like Bjork in a bad way.
Well, the thing is we never sat down and said, what do we want to do? That band started because one of our friends was joining the military and having this party at a bar, and there's a band playing. We were all musicians, yeah. So we were like, hey, let's learn a song and play it for Brad. And we played that night, and we just kept jamming after that. And like, we jammed at my house, you know, almost every day. And one day, Bill just goes, let's call ourselves Rocket Sauce. And that's how we became a band.
So there was no reason for that.
Yeah, that was, yeah, exactly. That was the most band conversation we ever had, was naming it. Like, we never talked about what we wanted to do, or we'd be like, hey, let's play this song, and we'd play it, and then I'd write lyrics and be like, play something to this, and, you know, just...
That's kind of a more easy way going about that kind of thing.
I think that's the only way to be in a band. Like, otherwise everyone's arguing with each other and pulling in different directions.
I see that kind of friction happening with bands more often than it ought to. Like, yeah. They can't agree on, like, some of the most simplest minutiae, like the name of the band, the name of a song, like what particular time they're going on.
Names of those songs, like, it was, we'd name those songs a lot like how we named the band. Like, just kind of, ugh. Someone opened a Snapple one time, and under it said Scorch Muffins. And we had no idea what it meant. We thought it was like, beautiful in some kind of weird...
But it had nothing to do with the lyrics.
Yeah, and so we named one of the songs Scorch Muffins, and there's another song called Jammage. And, you know, just...
That reminds me in a weird way of, like, Fall Out Boy. Like, all their song titles are, like, almost as if it's a question or a statement to somebody instead of, like, a description of the lyrics.
Yeah. Some that whole genre, like Panic at the Disco, or like, yeah. Song names like a sentence.
Yeah.
What? I don't know.
And of course, nobody ever calls it that anyway. So no, they just pick out like one word out of it.
The main word, yeah.
Like, what's the? I don't even remember. Fall Out Boy has a new album, and I haven't listened to the whole album. I listened to the lead single, and I was actually like really impressed. I liked it a lot, but of course, I can't remember the name of it because it was one of those weird titles.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'll see bands that have a really cool name, but it's spelled really oddly, or it's some kind of. It's hard to say or pronounce. Yeah. And I just think that's an awful idea just because people won't remember or won't be able to search it. Or,
yeah. You know, well, there's one band, you may have heard of them. Like, their name is 3!! Like, they're this indie hipster band that's a little bit like Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
And like, words are too mainstream.
Yeah. Well, so like, people had this problem. Like, how do you refer to them if you're going to see them, if you're at a festival and you want to see them? So like, everybody started calling them Chick 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 or something like that. It's like, yeah, like, words are so last century, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I met some guys when I was living in California that they wouldn't let me join their band because guitars were too mainstream. Some people just, that's just how they roll, man. They just want to be different.
Well, there was a band that was really popular last year, and I think they have a new album out. The name of them will hit me in a minute. But, like, they didn't have a lead guitarist. They had a bass player, and they had a piano player. It was Cold War Kids. That's their name.
Cosmic Mama is a local band that they don't have a guitar player, they have a piano player.
So. Really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty good. Just check out Cosmic Mama.
Yeah, it seems like every festival in North Alabama there is, they end up playing there somehow. Yeah.
I played Furniture Factory with them the other night. I was inside, they were outside, so like they got to come in and see, you know, 30 seconds of me, and I ran outside and got to see them. got to sit with them at the bar afterwards, but...
Well, let's back up. You were with those punk bands, or punkish, beatle-ish bands, yeah, whatever they were. Yeah,
fun bands. Let's just call them fun.
You went from that to doing, like, your solo stuff. Now, wait a minute. I was thinking about this earlier today when I was trying to figure out, like, what all I wanted to hit on with you and everything like that. I think one of these days when all of the guys that we're working with end up being in, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or whatever, part of the big apocrypha of knowledge is going to be that you almost joined Whiskey River Kings once upon a time.
Kind of, yeah.
So what happened there?
Well, I worked with Frankie at the Space Center. That's how we actually met. We were guides for the Star Wars exhibit.
And really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew you guys were working in archives, but I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, I started out in gift shop, and when Star Wars came, I got bumped over to that area. And Frank started working there for that, and so we kind of got to know each other there, and then we both got moved up to archives when one of the bosses got moved up to Curio.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there filing boxes and just really boring, monotonous work for weeks at a time, and we're sitting there listening to music, and we had apps on our phone where we could play guitar, and we'd sit there and write, and I was doing my solo stuff at the time, and I was sitting across the table from Frank when he said, I think you want to start a band. And I'm like, do it. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, he's finding members and having tryouts and whatnot at his house. And
so were you doing the solo stuff at that point?
Yeah, I was doing my music. But it hadn't really taken off yet.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, just show every other week.
There was a point where you could go in, like, a lot of different directions.
Yeah. I still had a lot of freedom, but I was definitely pursuing it. And I went to a couple of their little rehearsals, you know, back before Taylor had even joined the band. And it was just Frank and Big Dan. I don't think D-Dub was even in the band yet. No, because I was playing bass. I have a recording of us playing
really?
Wagon Wheel with me on bass, in fact.
I'd like to hear that.
I'll have to put it on my iPad.
Yeah, you have to think of that sometime.
And they were trying out a drummer. But turns out the kid was like 17 and like had to leave because mom was making dinner, and so they were like, this isn't gonna work out.
Well, maybe things happen for a reason. But
yeah, and at the time it was supposed to be a very folk Irish folk band. Like,
yeah, they've changed a lot. Yeah,
they've grown a lot, and it's you know, watching them go from that to, you know, mandolin, one guitar.
Well, I went with them now. I went with them to Panoply, I guess, last weekend. And, like, they were in the kind of like the international park, and they were right in front of, like, the Irish tent. And I was sitting there thinking, like, I wonder if they, like, actually came to these people and said, like, oh, we're an Irish folk band, like they started out with. And then they get up there and they started playing, like, you know, Fire and Whiskey, like
they
do now.
Yeah, it was close to happening. But I was also moving to California in a couple months, so I didn't want to commit to anything.
Right, yeah. So you think that's what kind of kept you from it?
Probably. I mean, looking back, if I hadn't been moving to California, I probably would have asked to be a part of it. I don't know what I would have done, like bass or guitar or what.
Yeah. Well, man, I was joking about it, but I really do think sometimes, for whatever reason, things do happen for a reason. So now you've found a lot of success with the loop and stuff on your own. I think that's, you know, a lot of guys around here, they'll go to hit up a coffee shop or, like, you know, an event that's going on, and they'll do solo stuff. And I'm not saying this is the case for everybody, but sometimes they struggle because they're up there on their own. They don't have somebody with backing vocals on a backing instrument or whatever. But you have a cool way of solving that problem.
It takes a special kind of person to be able to pull it off. Like, I know a couple guys that do it, and they do it well. Like Josh Allison is incredibly talented, and he plays with nothing more than his guitar and his voice.
Yeah.
And, my friend Gus Harker, when he's not in one of his many other bands, he plays solo with just himself. It's amazing. But I couldn't do it. I'd get up there by myself and I just felt empty because I'd always never been in a band. And
did it feel like somewhat awkward to you? Like you were just kind of putting yourself out there too much?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't mind playing a song with no effects or anything every now and then, but like trying to pull 4 hours of it.
Yeah.
People, it's just, I lose interest. How do I expect them to stay interested, you know, the audience?
So when did you start using the looping pedals and everything?
I got the loop probably summer 2010 is when I got my first loop station.
Was that the first time that you had been using anything like that?
Yeah, I'd been watching Dave do it for a while, and then I noticed like Andrew Sharp had one, and so I've kind of been studying how to do it and, you know, different techniques. And then my buddy got one. He brought it over, and I played with it, and I ordered one that night. Like, I had to have it. And from there, you know, I just got the loop station, and then I added my effects pedals from previous bands, like Distortion. And then I got a voice box where I can sing in harmony, and then I built my board, and it just kind of, it's been growing ever since, and still haven't stopped.
Not a care, convince yourself the mistakes you made were shared. Life burns away day by day, like a cigarette when you're outside for a break. Oh,
well, that stuff by now, that's probably second nature for you, right? I mean, I know you got like a new board lately.
Yeah.
You get used to that.
Every time I change pedals and they move around, it's a couple weeks of relearning where they are. But
how was it at first? Was it like learning to ride a bike while juggling, while doing 10 other things?
No, the loop station, it can be, it's like learning another instrument. It took a really long time because, you know, if you're just a smidgen of a second off, the whole song is going to be, yeah. And especially when you're doing a lot of layers, if you screw up one of those layers, you have a potential of destroying a song, and you just have to start over, and you have to look at the audience and be like, well, nah, my bad, and let's try it again.
Did that happen kind of often for you at first?
Well, at first, I wasn't using it all the time. I was just using it on the songs I was comfortable with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still happening. It's more frequently than I'd like it to, for sure.
Man, I was with you, I guess it was about a month or two ago, we were over at the Inn in Florence, and it's cool how you do that. I think you like really win a crowd over, especially if they haven't heard of what you do and everything, because they see one guy coming up there with a guitar and maybe some stuff on the floor that they can't see yet.
Yeah.
But then you whip all that out, and like you just have like this wall of sound that you're producing yourself. Everybody's just like, whoa, they're on board with it, right?
Yeah.
And by the time you got to the end of that set, you did that gorilla song, which I was just like, what the crap is this? I was just like, this is amazeballs, you know?
That's one of those songs that it has a potential of just going south fast. There's just so much going on. And I'm watching the lyrics, I'm watching my feet, I'm watching my hands, and if one of those things gets just a little bit off, it's just like, boom.
Well, now that you have that, like, it's almost as if you're creating like your own layer of sound. Mm-hmm. Like, does that extra layer that you're able to produce with the looping pedals, is it kind of like a comfort blanket in a way for you?
Yeah, it makes it. The loop pedal can save my ass or, you know, kick it.
Yeah.
If I forget something, I can let it play again until I remember it.
Or, and nobody else will be the wiser.
Yeah, I can just, you know, let's give another 8 measures and we'll see where we're at when we get back.
That's kind of cool, though. You can become like a one-man jam band in a way.
I'll be playing a song, and like someone will hand me a shot, and I'll just hit the loop and let it loop over and go take the shot, or, you know, that kind of thing. Or if I screw up a guitar solo, it's going to loop back in 8 measures. Yeah. I can just try again.
You know, we had been talking about this recently, and I couldn't think of any other person that's doing anything similar to what you're doing. The only person that I had told you about was Reggie Watts. He's kind of like a comedian / musician that makes like a comedy act out of like what you're doing. And obviously it's a lot different than what you're doing. But like, I don't know, did you have any influences for trying out this kind of stuff? Or did it just kind of come to you?
Well, I mean, Dave Anderson, when I lived in South Huntsville, he was doing it every Thursday at Bandito. And he plays... sometimes he plays 8 shows a week.
Let me back up. Is that Microwave Dave?
No. Microwave Dave is more of blues.
Okay.
Dave Anderson, he's in some big bands, Atlanta Rhythm Section, and I can't even think of the others. But he loops solo around town. And it's, if you haven't seen him, go watch him. It's incredible.
You think he was kind of like a proxy mentor for you a little bit?
Yeah, you know, and I'd walk up to him and I'd ask him questions about his setup, you know, like, what's this, you know, what should I get, and how'd you do this, and, you know, he was always really nice and willing to answer my questions, and I watched his feet for months.
Yeah.
I just would sit there and like, how do you,
See, that's weird. Like, sometimes I go to a show and, like, I watch somebody's fingers to see what chords they're hitting. You don't watch that at all. You're watching their feet to see the pedals they're hitting.
If they're looping, I'm definitely watching their feet. But, yeah, and I watch him do it. And then in Huntsville, we've got a lot of really good loopers. And they're all different in their own way. Like, they're all doing the same thing, but they're all creating something totally different.
Yeah.
Andrew Sharp, and when he plays solo, he's in Toy Shop. And they played on my album. They're an amazing band.
Is that the Wires and Wood album?
Yeah, Wires and Words. He when he loops, he does it with a keyboard, not a guitar, and so he's got a whole keyboard at his disposal, and he'll do actual drums. You know, I'll bang on my guitar and make drums. He has a drum machine at his fingertips. It's just crazy to watch, and he loops his voice in a different way than I do.
Yeah,
and he creates this huge wall of just vocals.
I do think there's like a big difference between like that and what you're doing though, because like I was talking about earlier, if you come out with just a guitar and like just that one board, you can kind of play with people's expectations a little bit. Whereas him, as cool as that is, you know, people kind of know what they're in for when he does that.
Yeah.
So you can kind of like bring him along for the ride and make like not just, you know, a string of songs that they're going to listen to, but like an actual show that's probably going to be really entertaining.
I try and make it a little bit of performance, just, you know, keep it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one thing that we tell all the younger guys in Dirty Apple. Like, you can be the greatest musician in the world, but if you don't have even just a little bit of showmanship, you're probably not going to win over a crowd.
Yeah. It's definitely, you have to really watch the crowd and feel the crowd. And that's something I'm still learning. I think every musician has to learn how to.
Yeah.
You
know, one local act that I can think of that does a really good job with that, like playing to a crowd and kind of like, you know, cutting up and having fun with them is Cheap Thrill DeVille. Have you seen those guys live? They're based out of Sheffield, I think, and they do an amazing job with that. They make sure to bring like extra long wires for the guitars, so like they'll like sit next to somebody or like wander around in the crowd while they're playing stuff like that, and just little things like that. I just think, you know, get people into it, make it way more of a show than just going to see music.
I was at Diamond Sports Bar, and this is like my only time I'd ever been there, and I was sitting there, and there's this 3-piece like metal band or something playing. It was really strange. But the bass player had a wireless system, and which is cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But I look over at the band. You know, this, I don't know. You've never been to Diamonds. It's huge.
Now, where's that at?
It's South Parkway, kind of next to Bandita South.
No, oh, okay.
Across the street. I look over at the band, and there's only two guys over there. But I can still hear the bass, and so my mind just kind of does a little backflip, like, what's going on? And I look behind me, and he's, you know, like 50 feet away from the stage, just kind of wandering around, just like strolling through the bar playing his bass until he finally reached that spot where it cut out, and so he started wandering back.
Yeah.
And just kind of watching this guy, you know, he wasn't dancing, or he looked bored, like he was just strolling. It was really strange.
Do you think there's a line when you do that kind of stuff where it gets into, like, the cheesy territory as opposed to just being, like, something cool extra to do?
Yeah, there's always... I'm always watching out for the cheesiness of it. I'll find a cool instrument, and I'm like, yeah, I'll bring this on stage, and then I'm like, no, no one wants to hear a kazoo. Like, it's a little cheesy.
I don't know, dude. That's the next big thing Arcade Fire is going to whip out. A full album of kazoo songs. Hey, so, okay, you've been doing this for about 2 years now.
Close to 3? Yeah, something like that.
So, you've obviously developed like your own style while doing that.
Like, I think so.
What do you think you're going to take it next? Like, what are some of the influences that you're listening to now that maybe you want to incorporate in?
I don't really know. It's funny. Sometimes I don't realize the influences until I'm listening to the song later. I'm like, this sounds like a Hold Steady song.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. I've been listening to a lot of Jack White, like, off his solo album.
Oh, who is it, guys?
Yeah. And I just really liked how raw it was. And, I mean, there was nothing fancy in my album. It was all live recordings.
Yeah.
But just, you know, just guitar, bass, drums. You know, of course, he had some of the songs, you know, piano and oboes and just craziness. But
yeah.
Some of the songs is just, like, real simple stuff. I like it a lot. But,
That kind of brings up an interesting point that I was going to ask you in a minute anyways. Like, I think that it's a good comparison to make about Jack White because, like, even though he has, like, what, 2 backing bands, one made of, like, all men and one made of all women, whatever, he's, like, the guy. He makes all the decisions musically. He doesn't have to, like, kind of go to committee in a band or anything like that. You do that, too. Do you prefer working that way, where you're just I love doing this all myself?
Or
do you look for other opinions sometimes?
It's way easier to do it all myself. Band practice goes smoother. You don't have to split the pay. It's just, I definitely miss being on stage with people.
Yeah.
And like any opportunity I have to be on stage with people, I do.
But
just booking myself and going there and setting up, I don't have to worry about anyone else screwing anything up.
Surrounded by love as far as I see, my fans, friends, and family. While I sit in this bar and play my guitar, dreaming of Albany. It's not that I'm mad, you're confused, don't be sad. I just gotta go while I can. We're back, so I say, and on that great day, you see that I am a new man. The wires, wood, and words will set you free. Take that first step, take that chance. I believe that wires, wood, and words can cause the world to dance. So take that great drive and leave you behind. Know that I feel just as you. Bittersweet tears as I count all my fears and realize I don't have a clue. Amusing it seems I've confused all my dreams with things that I never thought true. But here I am now, finally leaving the south, trying to find something new. But wires, wood, and words will set you free. Take that first step, take that chance. I believe that wires, wood, and words could cause the world to dance.
And very good about being a solo musician, but at the same time,
do you think you miss it though?
I definitely miss it. The thing is, this took off in a way to where now I don't even have time to think about a full band unless I was willing to cut back some of my shows for the solo thing.
I guess there are definitely pros and cons of doing it either way. In your experience, you just find more pros in doing it solo?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm playing a festival in May, or in August, it is May.
Is that the Camp Wigow?
Camp Wigow. And Toy Shop is also playing, I believe, and they're going to come and be my backup band so I can play songs off my album.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're going to play songs off my album since they were on the album.
Yeah.
They already know how to play it. So that I can have it the way it sounds on the album. Because I play my songs at shows solo, and it's just, some of them don't sound even remotely the same because I just don't have two guitars and a bassist and a drummer. I'm trying to do it all myself. And it's fun, but there's something about being on stage with two or three other guys, and when one of you does something awesome, you get to look back and like get a head nod or playing off each other. I was playing a show the other day with Gus Herger, and it was it's so much fun just like backing off the mic and going, take it for a ride, and just watching him solo for a minute and just getting the spotlight off me and onto someone else for a second.
Is that something that you might be looking for a little bit more, for people not just be singularly looking at you the whole time? Does it get like a little awkward, or are you just used to it by now?
I'm kind of used to that's what you expect when you walk up on stage, but it's there's something to be said about sharing the stage with people. Like, just playing off each other is, I think, what I miss the most. Just working together to create something out of silence.
Yeah. Okay, so one other thing I was going to ask you before we start a wrap-up in a minute is, we try not for this to be exclusively all about music, even though I guess we could probably talk about it all day if we wanted to. Yeah, all the other guys we're interviewing, we probably could all day too. But, like, one thing we want to get a little bit more of is, like, what else are you into lately? I was like, are there any books, movies, video games you've been into?
I wish I had more time for video games. I used to play a lot of Call of Duty. I don't anymore. In high school, I was on a competitive paintball team.
Really?
Yeah. And
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Oh, man, there's pro paintball.
Dude, are you still doing it? I want to go.
I am still doing it, yeah. Or I got out of it all through college just because I'm going from a sponsored team to not being
sponsored teams for paintball?
We were good.
This is a whole new world for me. This is amazing.
I played for free for like 3 years. You know, I didn't have to pay to go to the field. They gave us free paint. You know,
who sponsors you for that? Like DuPont? Or do you have like Jeff Gordon straps on you or something?
No, I mean, at the time it was the field that we played for. They
would
give us paint and stuff, and we'd take the field name banner to the tournaments. And,
who needs Call of Duty when you can do that kind of stuff for real?
Yeah, but I just recently had enough, expendable income to actually go buy another gun. And so I did, and I was like, I'm not going to join a team. I just, every now and then I have to go play and get it out of my system because I start getting the itch.
I don't think the solo paintball team is going
to
work out
for you. No, it doesn't work out at all, actually. And one of my buddies that I used to be on the team with in high school, he started a team for high school kids that he was coaching out of Birmingham.
Do they want it to be like a high school sport?
They're a high school tournament series. Only high school teams can play if you're under 18. And there's also a lot of colleges have paintball teams. Penn State gives scholarships for their paintball team.
I don't know why I find that weird, but I don't find it weird that some colleges have like that Harry Potter sport. What's that Harry Potter?
Quidditch?
Some colleges have Quidditch teams. They're like quasi-official. I don't know why I find that not to be weird, but I find it weird for them to have paintball teams.
Why? How are they? You can't play Quidditch without brooms.
We used to do it at UH. It's very complicated, but you can do it.
All right, noted.
I remember one thing was like we had a guy running around with a ping pong ball in his hand, and that was the snitch.
So you just had a bunch of guys chasing around another guy?
If somebody came up and saw it, they would be like, all these kids from UH, they're just baked all the time.
You can get one of those little helicopters and make it snitch.
Hey, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
And then that way some guy's not running around and like, smear the queer. Because that guy's going to be more out of breath than the guys chasing. Plus, you got to make it hard to find, right?
Oh, it's an exhausting thing because you're running around the whole time. I'm sure when we played, like, we were in the equivalent of, like, 5 miles a game or something like that. But, and the awkward thing is, yes, we were riding around with broomsticks between us.
Oh, that is awkward. Time.
It was ridiculous, but it was fun.
Huh.
Many moons ago at UA. Hey, so what else you got coming up? You talked about the festival.
I'll be playing Brewfest. I don't know if this will air before May 10th or not, but I'm playing Friday at Brewfest in Huntsville. I'm in the works right now. I'm very excited about this. I had Laura Kirby from The Broken Clock call me.
Ooh.
And she wanted to do a Beatles night.
Ooh!
And she had heard that many moons ago I was in a Beatles cover band. And I looked at her and was like, how did you find that out? Some of my best friends don't know about that. Like, I was in this like actual Beatles cover band for like a week. And somehow it got back to her. And she asked if we could do a Beatles night or if I knew anyone that would be willing to do it with me. And so I called Gus Hergert and he was totally down. And then I called Andrew Sharp. And
Wait, so are you actually getting the old band back together?
No. This isn't the same band by any means. This is a... Gus is in a band called the Wet Bandits. He plays drums, and he also does his solo stuff.
Wet Bandits? Is that a Home Alone reference?
It might be.
It is.
I've never put that together.
That was the first thing I thought of. That was the bad guys. They were the Wet Bandits. They would stick a rag in the sink and leave it on.
Yeah.
That was their calling card. That's how they got caught in the end. All right, anyway, I'm sorry.
And then Andrew Sharp, who's in Toy Shop, and he's also in the Don Osborne band, amazing musician. He's going to join. And then Anthony Sharp from Toy Shop. So it's going to be the four of us, the last Thursday of every month at Broken Clock, doing 4 hours of Beatles songs.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm really
excited.
When's
the first time you're doing it? Do you know yet?
Let me look at my calendar. I want to say it's the 23rd of this month, but...
I want to point out something he's doing that you can't see because this is audio, but he is very organized. He actually keeps dates, which you think would be a simple enough thing, but not every musician does this.
Yeah, it's the 23rd of this month, which isn't the last Thursday, but we did that because May has 5 Thursdays in it. So
freaking May.
Yeah, May's screwing everything up. But, so the 23rd is the first Beatles night. Right now we're still in, like, the planning phases of, like, what songs are we going to play and when are we going to practice? So
that's a good question because, like, obviously it's easy for you to do, like, early Beatles stuff, but, like... Are you going to be able to do any of, like, that work? Like, you going to be able to play, like, something like Eleanor Rigby Day in the Life or something like that?
Toy Shop's been doing lots of those songs for years, and they've kind of figured out ways around the things you can't do or just making something new to put there
that fills in
the empty space that would normally be there. And A Day in the Life, Andrew and Anthony both just kind of go up on their scales on the keyboard and the the guitar, and just, I don't know how Andrew does it. Like, he uses his foot pedal, and it just like builds and builds, and they do justice for sure.
Somehow Paul McCartney's new backing band is able to do that. That's one of the songs that he plays regularly in his set list now.
It's a keyboardist mostly, and I don't play keys, so I can't really go into detail about how he does it. But I've seen Paul twice now. And
I was going to ask you that. I've never seen him. I'm finally seeing him this summer at Bonnaroo. He's on the headliner. I cannot wait.
I saw him in 2009 in Atlanta, and I saw him last year in
Nashville?
No, it's St. Louis. It was the closest he came that year.
I started to go to a Nashville show. I think it was the year before last. He was playing, I don't think it was at Bridgestone. I think it was at Vanderbilt, of all places. And I was this close to going, something came up. But this year, finally, going to Bonnery. That's like one of the reasons I'm going to Bonnery. I can't wait. I'm going to wait there all day to get up front.
Yeah, he puts on a hell of a show, and his backing band, amazing. They do everything so well. I saw Ringo last year as well.
Really?
So, yeah.
Seen half of them. The ones that are alive, so exactly. That counts.
My sister and I broke back into backstage trying to find him.
Are you serious,
after
dude?
After the show, we hopped
it must not have worked, or you have told me.
He was already gone, apparently. We got chased out, though.
Hey, so, okay, here's one of my last questions. What do you think about him and Nirvana doing that one song?
It was interesting. That's all I can really say about it. It was fun.
Was you not a big fan of it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Those are two bands that probably should... Two bands from three or four eras of music apart.
Yeah.
It was cool that they had the idea. And, Dave Grohl is one of the last remaining rock stars that is still putting out music. Paul is, of course, the rock star, but of a different style.
Well,
Dave Grohl.
I think one could argue, though, that, and I think Paul himself would argue this, that he, in a way, kind of started, really, really hard rock kind of stuff like that. Because, if you think back to Helter Skelter, nobody did anything like that before.
Yeah. And the Beatles were the first ones to put distortion on a record.
Yeah. And that kind of sound, those kind of heavy guitar sounds with distortion or whatever, and Helter Skelter and some of the other songs, I don't know, that sounds like an early, if Nirvana existed in the late 60s or early 70s, it might have sounded like that,
Yeah, for sure. And they both did, they both created something. Nirvana kind of, the way I see Nirvana is that you had this, the 80s, and just all this new technology was coming out, like keytars and electronic drums, and people were spending hours and hours and days and weeks in the studio trying to get their snare to sound right.
That's what Dave Grohl's new documentary is about, right? About the Sound City studio. They're using all that crazy stuff.
Yeah. And then Nirvana came out, and it was just oh yeah, rock. We don't...
this exists!
Yeah. Guitar... bass, drums, vocals. We don't need six keyboards and just
or two
all this
cans of hairspray
reverb and exactly. We don't need showers apparently. But
did you see that video that was floating around about a month ago? It was the very first time that Nirvana played "Smells Like Teen Spirit" live, and it was just awful.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were doing, but the crowd was just like, "Oh my god, this is the most amazing thing we've ever seen."
But listen. You got to go back and listen to what the crowd had been listening to the 5 years before that.
Yeah.
Thank God, someone just rocking out.
Yeah.
Hair ballads. And
do you think we'll ever be on the verge of that again? Like one band just playing one song or one album, just changing everything.
I hope so.
I don't even think that's really happened in the past 15, 20 years.
I was really hoping that this Jack White album was going to. When I first heard it, I was proud that I was alive when it came out. Because most of the music that I know and love so hard, was long before my time.
Yeah.
But I turn on the radio and I just get pissed off.
I can't even listen to...
I can't tell the difference between the bands anymore.
Yeah.
Nickelback and Seether and Stained.
Exactly.
It all sounds the same and it's not going in any direction.
If you listen to any modern rock or top 40 radio station, it's just what you said over and over and over.
They found what works and they... are sticking with it. And then you got these amazing musicians and bands that are putting out music and it's hitting the charts and they're winning Grammys, but it's not doing anything.
Yeah. I would even go so far as to say as these supposed alternative or hipster bands, even they sound a lot alike. I mean, I really love, like, Of Monsters and Men and Lumineers and stuff like that, but they all sound the same. It's like they're trying to chase Mumford a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Mumford and Sons broke out and made it a popular thing.
I think you could say, and obviously it's not like they're Beatles or Nirvana or anything like that, but Mumford kind of did it a little bit.
Yeah, they definitely brought something fresh to the table when it came out. But, I mean, I respect Mumford, but when I hear them, I'm like, you know it's a Mumford song. It's just like,
there was something on Reddit yesterday. It was like, every song on their new album either has the words heart, hand, or both. Every song. And like, I like Mumford, but I saw that, and I'm like, that kind of checks out.
I don't think I got past like the third or fourth song on their second album. It to me, it was just a sophomore song. They put out the same album twice. Like,
yeah, I think you're kind of. I liked it, but
yeah, I mean, it's good, catchy little stuff, but it's not what I'm looking for in music, I guess.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I know you got a show later. Now, where are you headed to?
Tonight I'll be at Picasso's Grill in Athens.
Oh yeah, that's what we started talking about.
Yeah,
it's a callback. That's what they call it in this business. See?
Yeah, I had a place in Gadsden cancel on me, so I just called Picasso. You need some play? Yeah. All right, see you at 6.
Nice. Well, hey man, good luck with that and everything that's coming up.
Appreciate it.
Now remind everybody, when's that that festival? It's near Gadsden, right?
Yeah, it's south of Gadsden, right by JSU, I believe. It's August 9th through the 11th.
Camp Wig Out.
Camp Wig Out.
Well, I'm sure if somebody wants to find it, they can just Google Camp Wig Out.
Oh, yeah,
I don't think there's another Camp Wig Out.
Matt Owen from Eclectic Tuba is putting it on.
It seems like there's nothing that guy doesn't do.
I mean, it's amazing. He's on tour as we speak. You know, I stay updated, but yeah. He does solo shows with his tuba, and then does a band, and then, you know, starts festivals, and he's doing it all.
Seriously.
I can't imagine being that busy.
I don't even want to imagine. Well, listen, man, thanks so much for hanging out, and good luck with that, and I can't wait to have you out in some of our stuff that we got going on this summer. It should be a lot of fun.